Welcome to the Arts and Antiques Radio Show with appraiser and art aficionado, Dr. Elizabeth Stewart.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven.
Meet the prime movers of the Santa Barbara art scene and hear the tales of art, books, music, and experiences of great value. There's no place like Santa Barbara for the arts, where beauty works and thrives. What's valuable to you?
There'll be pennies from heaven for you and me.
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of everything valuable and beautiful. And today, a really valuable and beautiful individual is going to join us. And this is because the Ojai Film Festival is giving the Lifetime Achievement in Actor winner, Malcolm McDowell, their coveted prize. Mr. McDowell's a longtime Ojai resident. I did not know that. And one of the hardest working actors today, these 100 films under his belt. The celebration of the Lifetime Achievement Award for Mr. McDowell is Saturday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. And we have Mr. McDowell on the line. Mr. McDowell, are you there?
I am here, Elizabeth.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. This is a dream come true. It really is. I've been a fan, forever. And also, I'm joined in the studio by John Flandrick, who's our associate, and he helped me interview you today.
Hello.
There's John.
I'm the photographer for Elizabeth Stewart.
So, Mr. McDowell, I thought I would do something interesting and look up your birthday. So June 13th, 1943. I hope you don't mind me saying so.
Not at all.
All right.
One of the facts one cannot, unfortunately, get away from.
So what I did was I looked at a site where it gave me the personality profile of someone born on the 13th of June. And on the bottom of the site, Mr. McDowell, the very bottom of the site, it has the four most famous people born on that day. And they select out for every day the four most famous people. And I wonder if you knew that you are there. And you are...
Oh, no.
Yes, you are one of the four most famous people in the world born on June 13th, 1943. You are there. You are there with... Let's see if you know who this person is, Mr. McDowell. You're there with John Forbes Nash, Jr. Do you know who he is?
John Forbes Nash.
Jr.
To be honest with you, no, I don't. Who is he?
He's a Nobel laureate of 1929. There was a movie written about his life called A Beautiful Mind.
Oh, yes, of course. Okay, well, now I know who you're talking about.
Yes, he was born on your birthday. The other famous person born on your birthday, he was born 1953, is responsible for Last Man Standing, Tim Allen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's 13th of June. I didn't know that. He's a little bit younger than I am, but there you are.
And let's see, and of course yourself. And then the other notable things, there's another little section on this site that says the most notable things that happened on the day. And I thought, how interesting, because looking at your whole oeuvre, there's a lot of things that are sort of involved with space and time. And on your birthday, June 13th, 1943... The first man made, oh, no, not on 1943, but on that day in June 13th. Go ahead.
Is it the first moon thing?
Yeah, Pioneer 10 became the first man-made object to leave the central solar system in 1983.
Right. That's right.
On your birthday?
My birthday. Well, happy birthday.
You know,
to all of us on the 13th.
All the June. And then
I don't think I was born on a Friday. So,
can we look it up?
Some people think that's bad luck, but I'm not one of them.
Let's look it up. John's looking it up right now. It says also on this site, and I'm wondering if maybe this will ring true for you. It says that the main task this lifetime, you know, kind of conceptually, that you'll have another go around. But the main task this lifetime is to learn something either positive or negative in relating to others. And that it mentioned that you were a great teacher and a great healer.
Oh, well, healer I really had no experience of, but, and I don't know about a teacher either, but, you know, I've brought up five children various times, so I guess that's being a teacher, a parent is a teacher, isn't it?
Definitely. And it's interesting, yeah. We had a teachable moment when we were trying to reach Mr. McDowell on the phone because he was saying, one of the kids left the phone off the hook or something like this.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
Yes,
yeah,
it's the life with father.
Yeah.
And your children are Charlie, Lily, Seamus?
Lily's the oldest.
Lily's
the only girl. And she now has three little girls herself. So I'm a grandfather three times over with three beautiful daughters, for her, daughters, granddaughters for me.
And what are their names, Mr. McDowell?
They are Vera is the youngest. And then there's Clementine is the oldest. And God, no. I'll come back to that one.
Okay.
Had a senior moment. Goldie.
Goldie.
Oh, she's such a character. Yeah, they're all absolutely great. So I'm very, very blessed there. But, and then, of course, I've got four other boys. Beckett McDowell, who's got this beautiful voice, and he's a terrific singer and plays at the Vine Bar. I know he's 14. Every Monday night with his friend Luca. And then Finn, who's the middle one of the three, he's 11 at Ojai Valley School, along with his brother, Seamus, who's 9.
Oh. Well, I have to ask you. So I was just told a couple of days ago that I'm going to be a grandmother for the first time in my life.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
A
Thank
beautiful
you.
Blessing.
And I want to ask you, you know, the names that you've given your children. I mean, Lily's beautiful, Seamus Hudson, Beckett Taylor, and Finian Anderson. Such beautiful names.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, you know, they're of course inspired by the Irish blood in me, but the Hudson actually is because of a dear friend who's a director who directed. Chariots of Fire, Hudson. And he's a dear friend. And, of course, Anderson for Lindsay Anderson, who's a genius, who I was lucky enough to work with early on in my career, who started it off for me in film, this incredible journey. And then Taylor happens to be my actual real surname. But when I went to register my name with Actors Equity in London when I was 20 years old, I was told that I couldn't use the name Malcolm Taylor because they already had an actor of that name. So, and they went, and I was waiting, you know, in line to, and so I had to come up with a name very fast. So I just used my mother's maiden name, which was McDowell. Mm. And that's how I got that name. And, but so I wanted one of the children, you know, to have at least Taylor in their name, so one does. So it's
Would you help me out, Mr. McDowell, and would you tell me another favorite boy's name? It looks like my grandson is going to be a boy, or my grandchild is going to be a boy. Can you help me out with a name?
I don't, I like Finian, of course, but there's Sean is a strong name. It's so. I think names set the life path.
I do too. That's why this is
important. Very, very important. And, you know, it was my wife who said when she was pregnant that if it's a boy, it's going to be Beckett. And my grandfather was Beckett. He was an actor manager and a very strong character. And she's always loved the name Beckett, as indeed I have. But so Beckett, you know, it takes a bit of living up to a name like that. Really.
I agree. I named my son, my son's name is Lachlan Cameron.
Oh, that's a beautiful name,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I thought so. Lachlan Cameron Guthrie Stewart. And
so you're more on the Scottish side of things to me.
Yeah, his dad was
on the other side of the Irish Sea.
Yes.
But nevertheless, we are brethren and very much attached at the hip, as indeed the landmass was before it kind of moved apart.
I met my son's father at the University of Edinburgh when I was doing graduate work, and I was this little kid from a farm town in Illinois, and being in Edinburgh was such an amazing thing for me, and we became close friends, and I decided that maybe he was the one, and I asked him if he'd come visit the little town in Illinois where my mom still lived.
Yeah.
And he came over 2 days fresh off the boat, shall we say, and we went to this really interesting film in 1976, and that was Caligula.
No,
1979, actually.
Was that a date? He must have had certain aspirations.
I tell you, Malcolm, this was amazing. If I could bring you back with me, you could just see this woman, this crazy young girl. I think I was 20 years old, maybe younger. I don't know. I was in early years in college.
And probably quite innocent.
Yes, very innocent.
From Illinois. You
know? Yeah, farm girl, you know, so...
Yeah.
So I saw in the paper advertised that there was this wonderful young British star, and he was starring in this movie Caligula. And I'm a history buff, you know. I have my doctorate in art history, and I thought, well, this is going to be interesting. This is something about old Rome, and it's, you know, sort of the angry young men kind of theater syndrome that my son's father was very interested in. And I thought, let me just see if we can get tickets. And we went in this little tiny town. We found this movie. And actually, I sat through about three-fourths, and I don't know what scene it was, but I just took off and ran down the street because I was thinking all British men are going to be like like Malcolm McDowell film.
I don't know whether I can't speak for him.
But, no.
the thing is now, Elizabeth, is that, and I will tell you, is that most of that film, even though, of course, it's a film, and is really based on history, on a Roman historian called Suetonius.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff, outrageous as it seems to us, was really very ordinary in Roman times. So I'm sorry that you were offended.
I was scared more than
nudity.
No, I was scared more than offended. But now, you know, after, you know, living in this world for such a long time and seeing, you know, how people are, and also being a historian, you know, you're so right. I mean, we can look back and say, wow, you know, it was just such an interesting moment. I remember coming out of the theater, blinding sunlight, and taking off as fast as I could away from this British young man.
Did he run after you?
Yeah, he did. He actually did. He actually ended up having Lachlan Cameron Guthrie Stewart. But I can tell you, I literally took off because there was Malcolm McDowell on the screen, and I'd never seen anything like that. But the interesting thing is I'm talking to that man today. I'm just so thrilled. I'm so thrilled. So thrilled to be talking to you. And by the way, Richard's giving us a sign. He's our producer, that we got to go to a quick station ID. Would you be kind enough to hang in there with me, and we'll come back? And
I'll hang in. Do you want me to hang up?
No, because hang in there, and we'll be back with Malcolm McDowell. Then. Back with Malcolm McDowell, and the reason for this interview is that Mr. McDowell is being given the Lifetime Achievement in Acting at the Ojai Film Festival. There'll be a private screening. Oh, actually, there are tickets, but they're going fast, Kathleen is telling me. Oh, Lucky Man, his film, where he starred in it, he wrote it, etc. There's going to be a question and answer period, then reception November 3rd at 7 p.m. with Malcolm
McDowell. I think it's at the Ojai Arts Building.
Yes, the Ojai Arts Center. So, Mr. McDowell, can you tell me a little bit? I have two names here, and I wonder if you tell me a little bit what these folks were like. I read somewhere that your childhood was a little rocky, and I think one of the sites I was referring to said that every Monday you were regularly beaten with a slipper or a cane. And I thought, let me ask Mr. McDowell, what was Edna McDowell, what was she like, your mom?
She was, a beautiful woman, actually, very beautiful, and came from Manchester and had three sisters. One sadly died in her early 20s of septicemia, which could have been, treated with penicillin, but that was the war years. And was in short supply. My mother, I think somebody, my sister told me she would have been 106 on April the 13th. So she was a lovely person. She was a very hardworking woman who, my father was quite a difficult man, so I don't know how she managed, but she did. And she was very loving and always supportive of me and my antics, wanting to be an actor and all that. And I was from the north of England, which was, they thought that was so exotic and really ridiculous,
The people, you mean, as an actor, that you came from the north of England, folks thought that was exotic?
Yes, well, yes. I mean, it was a sort of working class neighborhood. My father... owned the local pub, and so all the regulars in the pub that went there to drink their pints of beer, were basically working men, and when they said, "What's young Malcolm going to do?" is, "Oh, he wants to be an actor." And of course, they'd look sideways at that.
I see. So,
like, why waste your life on acting? Well, that's a good point, of course, but. it was rather exotic from a working class sort of area, So there weren't that many. Although Albert Finney, who was just up the East Lancs Road in Salford, he was a sort of inspiration to me. And, I remember sitting in the Odeon in Liverpool and watching Albert, who was my favorite actor, an English actor. He'd been brilliant in a movie called Saturday Night and Sunday Morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a beautiful film that he starred in as a working class lad, and all that. And it gave great encouragement to me sitting there in the dark. And I thought, wow, I think I could do that, perhaps, And so he was a shining light for us. Like apparently I was to Gary Oldman, who said the same thing. He watched a movie of mine with his mum in their council house in South London, and they watched a film I did called The Raging Moon.
Mm.
And he said to his mum, "Mum, that's what I'm going to do. I want to do that, what he does."
Amazing story.
And Gary told me that, but he said that many times. But, such a lovely actor, he's a great actor.
With that kind of working class sort of the, going back in time, but that kind of perception, I remember I lived in outside of Manchester in Altrincham for 5 years, yeah. And, my son's father had quite a posh accent. He was immediately identified. He was a Gordonston kid. He was immediately identified as right. By his accent. But the interesting thing is you're talking about a different time where, even my mother-in-law, she was very cognizant of the accents and the manner. And I remember, Malcolm, we were at church together, and I took out a paper handkerchief, and she took it out of my hand, and she said, "In our family, we don't use paper hankies; we use cloth hankies." And it was.
Well, I'm sure the people at Kleenex were happy to hear that.
Yes, I know, but that what my point is a perception about that,
Of course.
And so my next question is: so did you got into the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts, on the strength of, you know, obviously your talent, but did they have a feeling, oh, this is a working class North of England type of a young man? And what was it like then?
What happened was I was chosen and cast in school plays a lot, Shakespeare. And the musicals at Christmas, the head of the school, the principal, Mr. L. F. Baker, was a real theater buff, and he would always take us to the Old Vic to see Laurence Olivier or John Gielgud or whatever, and we took trips to Stratford to see the Royal Shakespeare Company and all that. So, you know, and he was very keen, and I played some of the great parts in Shakespeare before I ever left school, before I was 17. And so I always thought to myself, if all else fails, you know, in my life, I'll become an actor. And, you know, of course, the ignorance of youth was talking, but, and then, you know, I was a coffee salesman, and oh, lucky man, the film they're going to show at the Ohio Film Festival is a film that is based on my own sort of life as a coffee salesman, and that's how it starts. But, so I had this girlfriend, and she went to elocution lessons, and she said, look, why don't you come with me? And the teacher was this wonderful lady who's 82, called Mrs. Harold Ackley, and she taught etiquette and speech. I didn't really know they would go together, but apparently they do. And she encouraged me to take these sort of exams, I guess, or auditions for Lambda, which I did. And luckily, one of the jurors who was adjudicating it offered me a job in a theater in what we call weekly rep. A different play every week for the whole summer season. And that's what I did. And that's basically where I learned how to act, you know.
Tell me the name of the elocution mistress again.
Mrs. Harold Ackley.
That is straight out of central casting, that name. It's just totally perfect.
And, you know, she was 82. And when I first met her, because there was a thunder and lightning storm going on outside, she had an office in what was called the Crane Building, which was actually the Crane Theater in the center of Liverpool. And I knocked on her door, and it swung open, and I poked my head in, and it was just a room with a table and a chair, a couple of chairs, and I called out her name, and from under the table came this little, I'm here, but I'm scared. And she was hiding under the table because she didn't like lightning.
She didn't think she'd like you?
Lightning.
No, oh, because of the lightning. She didn't like lightning. Oh, you must write another movie about her.
She was so adorable. And she, you know, of course I didn't learn one thing from her, you know, in terms of the technique of acting. I mean, she was more into sitting up straight on a sofa while having a cup of tea kind of acting with your pinky sticking out.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, she was a silent screen star in the 20s. Uh-huh. And, but she was such a beautiful human being that I really didn't care. And I just loved to go and listen to her regale these wonderful stories of her life. And I was very happy to do that. And then, you know, I won this gold medal and she was so proud and all that. And then, literally, I kind of forgotten about her because life moved on, and I was in the theater and starting to do movies and stuff. I happened to be at a party with a wonderful actress called Rita Tushinger. She had starred in a few earlier films, Taste of Honey, being one of them by Sheila Delaney, the writer, great writer. And I was talking to her, and, you know, we were talking about Liverpool because she was from Liverpool, too, And she said, yes, and I went to Mrs. Ackley, you know, and I went, no, oh, my God, Rita, you're kidding. I went to Mrs. Harold Ackley, and because that was what was on the brass plate, she had her husband's name on the plate, which was sort of beautiful in a way. And so Rita Tushingham and I are graduates of the Mrs. Harold Ackerley Academy.
School of Elocution and Manners.
Yeah.
And deportment. Deportment.
Yeah.
Mr. McDowell, hang on for another quick station ID, if you would be so kind. Will you hold the line with us?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Don't turn that down, dear listener. Lifetime Achievement Award winner, Malcolm McDowell. Little me talking with the great Malcolm McDowell. Don't turn that down.
You'd be better by far to be just what you are. You can be what you want if you are what you are. And that's a lucky.
Man, and of course that will be screened November 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Ojai Arts Center Theater, and we're celebrating today Malcolm McDowell, a lifetime achievement and actor winner who lives in our community here. He lives up in Ojai, and we're talking about his youth at the moment, and it's so interesting. We just finished a story about Mrs. Harold Ackerley, his elocution and deportment mistress back in Liverpool in his early years. How old were you then, Malcolm? How old?
19.
And just another interesting thing about Mr. McDowell and youth. So he mentioned the Cannock School, where he actually was starring before he even left school in a number of Shakespeare productions. Well, you were asked to make a keynote speech in 1969 there at your old school. Do you remember what you said?
God, no.
All right. Well,
I may have said...
you have free reign to make them say anything you want.
No, because I have it. I have it in an old newspaper article that I looked up.
All right.
And
oh,
I know.
God, so you know what I said?
Yes, I know what you said, and I'll tell you, well, if you... I'm very humbled to have... You said, okay, you were asked to make a keynote speech for your old school, Kennick School, and you flew from the United States. And you were quoted in this article as saying, I guess some member of the press got a hold of you or recognized you or something. And you were saying, yes, I'm flying back to do a keynote speech, but I used to hate all the kerfuffle around speeches and all of the stateliness and the people pontificating and blowing smoke. Mm-hmm. I just hated that. I hated that. So the reporter, I think, kind of kept tabs on you, and he reported back that you flew to the school 1969 from the United States, and the headmaster introduced you and said, the great Malcolm McDowell, one of our proudest, alumni, et cetera, alumnus.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Mr. McDowell. The students went crazy. They all applauded. You stood up behind the podium and said, I pronounce this open day open. And you sat down.
I do believe that's true. And they were like, what? I mean, it's open. It's open. Have fun.
And apparently the reporter said that the blank look on the headmaster's face, it's like, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do now? Because we were expecting 40.
I think he wanted me to tell the audience what an incredible learning institution Cannock College was. And made me the young man that I was.
Of course,
then.
Of course. And he wanted it to go on for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Well, he was a bit disappointed. But, he was a fantastic person, really. In retrospect, of course, he's the one who administered the beatings. But in retrospect, I had tremendous admiration for him.
You know, our producer just gave a yelp there. No, Richard, you know, back in those days in British school, you got yourself beat if you didn't tell them.
I think that's where the British military got it from, too, because they were pretty fierce.
Well, there's a pecking order, isn't there? Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we don't want to go into why the British are so screwed up.
We could do a show on why Americans are all screwed up, too, you know.
A lot to do with it is that they have what they call public school system, of which I went to. I was a product of that system, which is basically, you know, a school where only all boys would go, with a boarding school. You stayed there and came home for term, and you were separated from your parents at an early age, 11 in my case. In some cases, it's as early as 6 or 7. Mm. And these public schools were set up, and they're going back 1,000 years, some of them.
Yeah.
For the British aristocracy to send their sons so they could be educated, have a all-round education so they could go out into the empire and administer. And, you know, so schools like Eton and Harrow, and they're the two that most people know, but there are many of them.
Well, as you might know,
you mentioned Gordonston.
Gordonston, that's where Lockie's dad was in school, and he hated it.
And, you know, that's where Prince Charles went.
Yes. Yes.
How do I know that? Who cares? I'm
not no, that's actually true, because he was before Adrian, but definitely. But he would say the same thing, Malcolm. He would say, you know, the mm-hmm. beatings and the teasing and the mercilessness, teasing from the prefects, and, you know, just and the dureness of it all and how.
Well, I made a movie called If, which is really.
Yeah, that's what I was leading up to. I was setting this up, and you did it for me. Yes, do tell us. If.
Well, it was basically, it's a film about a revolution in a boys' school. This is, of course, in 1968, and which is when we shot it. And it's an extraordinary film in many ways. It was a genius director who made it.
Lindsay Anderson.
Lindsay Anderson, who was, you know, an absolute extraordinary human being. It was like working with an Oxford don. He was an extraordinary human being. I've never met anyone like him since, and he'll always have a very close place next to my heart, because he started this journey off for me. And, you know, it was when Kubrick saw If, he cast me in Clockwork Orange. He didn't, I mean, even before I met him, really, I was cast because he'd seen If. And he was so taken with it, and it's such a great film. And by the way, it's not really dated at all, because I saw it because I had another one of these Lifetime things, and at that time I chose If because it was the first one.
And then didn't Mr. Anderson, didn't he make a trilogy with Britannia Hospital in 1982?
He did.
Yeah, okay.
Well, what happened, we won the Grand Prize, the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival in 1969 with It. Mm. And I was, of course, a young, very naive young actor. And I just thought, wow, you know, we're such a good, you know, couple, Lindsay and I, that the way we work. And I sort of, you know, said, Lindsay, wouldn't it be great if we made another film together? Of which case we were walking down the Croisette. He stopped. His eyes rolled back in his head, and he said, Malcolm, where do you think you're going to get a script for you and I to do? He goes, do you think they fall from the trees? Mm. He goes, if you want to do another film with me, I suggest you write it. And he walked off. So I thought, well, if I want to work with him again, which of course I did, I started to write my adventures as a coffee salesman. Mm. Which led to other stuff and to this extraordinary journey, like Candide. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's one of the books he gave me. Mm. He said, it's very much like Candide. Here, read this. And I could see what he meant. He also gave me Kafka's America, another great book. Mm-hmm. And so he was a teacher, really. I mean, he was a teacher, but course, we used to row, too, because, you know, I was strong-willed, bloody-minded northerner, you know. But that's the way really good work came about, because we were prepared just to fight for what we believed in, and that was it.
How did Mr. Anderson, as you describe, as brilliant as an Oxford Don, how did he get along with Alan Price and the guys that were making music for Oh Lucky Man, the Animals? How did he get along with that sort of counterculture?
Lindsay is the one that he did a documentary about, Alan, who was quite a well-known singer.
Yeah.
He was part of the Animals.
Yeah.
And with Eric Burdon, you know, and it was Eric Burdon, Alan Price. He played the organ in that incredible House of the Rising Sun.
Yes.
You know, that organ interlude is Alan. And, you know, Lindsay, he really liked Alan a lot. And in fact, had him write the music for pretty much everything he did, including theater stuff. And he was always doing plays.
I have to remark that Alan Price is such a brilliant musician. I mean, he's a performer, but he's just, you know, the scores and the arrangements and all the sort of thing. I mean, you look at him, he's a beautiful-looking young thing, and then, you know, in your film, I mean, just so charismatic, and then you realize he's just an amazing composer. Mr. McDowell, we have to go to another quick break. Will you hold on the line for us? I'm just so enjoying this.
Okay.
Don't turn that dial, dear listener. Back with Malcolm McDowell, Lifetime Achievement Award winner at Ojai Film Festival.
You think you can rely, you are a lucky man. If you found the reason to live on and not to die, you are a lucky man.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart with the great honor of being able to speak with Malcolm McDowell. I've just loved his career, and you can tell if you're listening, dear listener, I know many of his movies, and he made such an impression on me as a young girl in a farm town in Illinois many, many years ago.
I have to say that you mentioned Clockwork Orange. I watched it, I think, 15, 20 years ago?
Uh-huh.
I'm still recovering.
You're still, well, on that score, I want to say that there's a website, Richard, devoted to, it's called The First Punk. And the website is devoted to Mr. McDowell because they claim on this site, it's a punk site, they claim that The First Punk was Alex DeLarge, of course. And they're saying because of Mr. McDowell's character of Alex DeLarge, that's where the beginning, the genesis of the punk style started.
I was looking at some of the photographs online, and he's got one photograph of him with the beard and the spiky hair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this the character in Clockwork, we're going a little, you know, we're going back to 1971. That's the, if you think about the beginning of punk, you know, the punk stuff that's happening, but they're claiming the site is called The First Punk. And says that, you know, Malcolm was the first punk.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Malcolm McDowell, the first punk. Can I ask a few random questions, Mr. McDowell?
Yes, sure.
Why are you are you truly afraid of snakes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there are people that love them, of course. I'm not afraid of them, per se, but when you get a boa constrictor under your bed and then it goes missing. Yes, I'd say I'm fairly opposed to that.
I mentioned it because, you know, I read somewhere that when you have to, I should have made notes of all the sites. I'm a bad historian that I looked at and all the books I looked at. But when you were appointed to meet with Mr. Kubrick, who didn't know many of your films, you didn't know many of his films, I should say, he didn't know that you were afraid of snakes and kind of found this out in filming Clockwork Orange, and therefore Basil was introduced.
No,
wrong?
If Stanley knew that I was afraid of snakes, he'd put one in every scene, believe me. But he wanted to get a reaction. You know, I'm not really afraid of snakes. I mean, I'm fascinated by snakes. Mm. I've done movies where I've had to work with green mambas, which are fair. You get bitten with one of those, and you may as well start, you know, saying your prayers, because that's it. Mm. But we did have a snake on set as my pet, Basil the boa.
Yeah.
And it was kept in a drawer under my bed. And
no,
during
he's...
a take, I had to open the drawer and take out the snake like it was a pet. And I opened the drawer, and it was empty. And the snake had got out of the drawer and wrapped itself around the mattress springs of the bed, ready to crush whoever was taking a nice nap. So am I scared of snakes? Yeah, I think so.
Bit. Oh, my heavens. Can you tell us how your friendship developed with Roy Scheider? Or Scheider, sorry.
Oh, Roy. Well, we did this film called Blue Thunder.
Yeah.
And Roy, I've always admired him, you know, as an actor. He was sort of very under the radar because everything was minimalist in a way. And but his performance, you know, as Bob Fosse in All That Jazz,
yeah,
I think stands out as a beacon, and it's a tremendous performance. I don't even know whether he won the Academy Award, and if he didn't, it's disgraceful, because he should have done.
Another sorry to interrupt, please. I have another question then. Have you done any commercial work?
I have. I've done a few voiceovers for commercials, which all actors love.
Are you tongue in cheek, or are you really serious?
No, you're not. But I haven't been asked to do, I'm glad to say, sort of selling, you know, please go buy this, that, and the other. No, I play characters, and I did one for Sprint, which was acclaimed at the time as one of the great commercials. And it was your name's now escaped me, because one of the most famous actors in America, and a lovely man, James Earl Jones.
Mm.
It was with James Earl Jones, and we were in tuxedos in a theater, and we were declaiming these ridiculously pathetic texts that people say, and they were real ones that they took. I don't know how they found them, but they'd think, "Are you in the grocery section? Yes, I think I see you. Oh, no, it's not you." Stuff like that, you know. Absolute crap. Banal stuff that we would declaim in our tuxedos. And they were hilarious. They were terrific.
That's why I asked.
I did another set of things for Lunchables. And they let me say whatever I wanted, so I could say, "Yeah, there's more protein in the box than there is in the content." sorry. I never tried them, so I don't know. You can't say that. They're paying on. Sorry.
Oh, fantastic.
But we had some fun with it. You know, it was fun. They would give me one-word association things, and I'd have to make up stuff. So it was in the early days of cell phones and emojis. And they said emojis, and my answer was a wonderful card game played in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, let's play emojis tonight with the family.
John's just put up on the screen in the studio here the Sprint commercial that I was hoping you'd lead us to when I asked about commercial work, and it's hysterical. And you've got that playing up in the.
I'm still thinking about you.
Oh, there we are.
Ryan is a total Hardy McHardison.
His amazeballs is like the hottest Hardy that ever Hardy.
He's like a Hardy times infinity plus another.
Anyways, there you go.
Oh, okay, great.
Fantastic.
I haven't seen him for years, but I love doing it. And it was such a treat working with him. You know, he's such an extraordinary great actor, but such a wonderful presence, you know, wonderful man, a very humble man.
Interesting.
And I was so lucky to work with him.
Richard, do we have to go another quick break? Mr. McDowell, bear with us. So 4 commercial breaks. I'm sorry to do it, but would you hang in there with me?
Okay.
All right. Don't turn that dial. Back with Malcolm McDowell. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm talking with Lifetime Achievement in Acting winner for the Ojai Film Festival, Malcolm McDowell. Mr. McDowell, would you answer another dumb question?
Yeah.
Why, in 1972, you turned down the role of Winston Churchill in Young Winston.
Mm-hmm.
Did it not suit you, or did you have a feeling about Mr. Churchill? Or?
I mean, yes, I was a great fan of Winston Churchill and loved everything Churchill. Visited his grave near the stately home, you know, where he was born, at Blenheim Palace. And I always thought he was the savior of our civilization as we know it. And my father, he loved Churchill, and he was a great conservative. So, you know, he passed that one down to me, which I'm very pleased that he did. And I managed to see him twice. Once I overtook him, I was on a scooter, overtook this limousine, looked back, and there he was in the back, smoking a cigar.
Mm.
And then I saw him in the House of Commons, sitting there with a stick, leaning on his stick with his chin, like a marble statue. And then he got up and left the chamber, you know. So when I was asked to play young Winston, I just didn't think that I was really right for the part, you know. I'd just come off doing Clockwork, and I was really exhausted by that. And I just I thought that they could do better, you know. And I think they got a very good actor. Simon Ward played it, and he played it very well, I thought. And you know, and of course, then later on, we've had Gary Oldman's Churchill, which was stunning. And John Lithgow's, by the way, I liked that when he did it in The Crown. I thought he did a very good job, too. But they were different. But nonetheless, very interesting. I'm working with John at the moment.
Yeah, do tell us.
Well, we're doing a film basically about the Roger Ailes kerfuffle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or the founder of Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
Or the man who made it what it is, what it was, or still is. Sadly, he passed, but it's all from the women's point of view. You know, they have this sort of atmosphere at Fox News that the Me Too movement would have a field day with. And so Megyn Kelly's very much a part of it. It's a really incredible script, and it's really a fantastic project. Charlize Theron is starring in it, and is producing it. And Nicole Kidman's in it, John Lithgow, as I said, Margot Robbie. I mean, it's an incredible cast. One can go on and on. They got absolutely the best people, and everyone's doing it, you know, because they love the script. And so, yeah, that's it. So,
fantastic. Wow, that is amazing. I just want to lower the tone here by saying that you did a cameo appearance on South Park in 1997, and you actually were the only character, I guess, to be actually yourself in the flesh. Because
I know.
Because you're Trey Parker's favorite actor.
I met him at a Thanksgiving dinner, and, you know, I mean, look, they are geniuses, those guys. And Matt and Trey, I mean, and South Park, you know, it's, let's not even go to the Book of Mormon, you know, because all the wonderful stuff they've done. So I was just thrilled to do it. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't think I've ever seen it. But I know people like it because they tell me, you know, from time to time. So it was a great honor to do it, you know.
And then you were in South Park again in 2000 playing this is the name of your character, British Person, and it was a parody of Great Expectations, Dickens' work.
That's right, but it was a masterpiece theater parody, you know, the person.
Sure.
But that was the only one. It's all of the same one, if you see what I mean.
Yes, yes.
In South Park. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, I just want to give another announcement as regards the achievement, Lifetime Achievement in Acting winner. Malcolm McDowell's been talking with us. And if you would like to see Oh Lucky Man, which is a 1973 film, I looked at it a number of times in preparation. I can't believe how fresh it is and how wonderful the music is. And we'll have that as actually screened on November the 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Ojai Arts Festival Theater.
And I'll be there.
And he'll be there. Question and answer session and a reception following. What could be a better and more interesting evening seeing this wonderful work, it's up there with any great rock opera. It really is. Well, Oh Lucky Man.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Yeah.
You know, that Lindsay had it in his mind. When I asked him, really, you know, it's an epic film in his terms, epic.
Yes.
And I said, well, what is the genre? You know, how could we? He said, it's really a picaresque film in the way that Sullivan's Travels, this great film that starred Joel McRae, Preston Sturges' film, which he took me to a screening of it at the National Film Theatre. And when I saw it, I understood where he was coming from with Oh Lucky Man. And so that's a big influence, in a way, on that film.
So interesting.
But, you know, it's wonderful because the different the actors play different roles in the film, and we did that because there's a type, you know, there's a sort of a type of person, and they go, yeah, well, let's have, you know, and Lindsay had his repertory of actors that he loved: Arthur Lowe, Mona Washbourne, Danny Nichols, and Ralph Richardson, and all that. So he'd say, well, let's have Ralph play this part as well. So that's just the way it went. You know, one actor would play maybe three or four parts in the movie. And it's really wonderfully done and very, very, as you said, fresh. It's
very, very fresh. And you know, it's interesting in an era now where we are sadly anorexized away from a full-on narrative. This is a full-on epic narrative, like you referenced,
right.
You know, Mr. Anderson throwing a copy of Voltaire's Candide mm-hmm. your way. I mean, it's a full-on young man's journey.
It is.
I'd love to see it, you know,
the
revived.
Thing is, I honestly think it's rather subversive.
It is.
You know, it's but brilliantly so, without hitting you on the head, you know, telling you you're watching something. But I remember taking some Italian friends of mine who were critics, and they'd come to England, and I was doing one of these things. I'm going back 10 years, probably, and they hadn't seen Oh Lucky Man, and they all came out absolutely stunned. I mean, barely able to talk. And they were just absolutely mind-boggled about how subversive the film really is, and how, anyway, you know, listen, I hope to get a new audience to come and take a look, and if
yes.
they like it, you know, you can get it on DVD too, I believe.
Yes, yes.
In fact, I think I've begged Warners, I kind of blackmailed them actually, and said, well, I'll do the commentary for Clockwork Orange if you put out Oh Lucky Man on DVD. So that's how I got it actually put out.
I would love to see it. It's this, that you said your Italian friends, you know, I'm wondering if they saw any like Shadows of Commedia dell'arte or some sort of
maybe
or classic Greek, you know, the Odysseus's journey as a young man and Telemachus as a young man. So
that's
sort
right.
of the young man's
right.
theme running through mm-hmm. it. But I loved it. I thought it was a totally interesting narrative, and it's time for it to be revived, I think, on stage. I think it's just fantastic. So we will be there in the audience. And one more time, if you would like to see, oh, thank you, Mr. McDowell. Oh, Lucky Man screening for us. And this is really cool because if you're in the Santa Barbara, Ojai area, you must be here at the Ojai Arts Center Theater, November 3rd at 7 p.m. You can call, if you'd like, the Ojai Film Festival. They have a website. They're actually call right away because those tickets are going quick. I just heard this morning. Be careful. If you want to see this, you got to jump on the Ojai Film Festival website. Many, many thanks to Mr. Malcolm McDowell. And it's been
a total honor.
Thank you so much. Many, many kisses your way. Thank you. Thank
Poor
you, Mr. McDowell.
John didn't get much of a word in edgewise.
No, he didn't. Anyway. That's him, though. Bye,
Malcolm. Anyway, take care.
Bye.
Lucky man.